Mayor.
Hello and welcome to Cinema Subculture, the podcast where we discuss everything strange, obscure and downright messed up in the world of movies. My name's Gary.
And my name's Simon.
Here we are, Gary. Episode 18.
Yep. Thanks for joining us again.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Welcome back, Cinema Subculture. Sorry, 18. Festive time of year coming up, Gary.
Getting
cold outside.
Winter.
The winter beckons, Gary.
Winter's want to be cold.
Yes, this is true. It's getting nippy and dark. Miserable. You haven't defrost the car yet?
I had to use de-icer once.
That's a heavy duty de-icer?
Aye.
That's the stench of preparedness, Gary. I'm lucky if I've got a scraper.
Oh,
I'm
really?
Putting my hand in my sleeve. Aye. Trying to warm up the ice.
That's
so it'll
probably
move.
Bad up there. You're in the hills there.
Oh, I'm in the valley.
Ah, the valley.
Like, oh, aye. We've not actually had it up so
no,
bad up.
I, don't know.
I think maybe like September time there was a frosty one that had to defrost. But no, not yet. Not proper winter yet.
Right.
Snow will be here soon, Gary. Right, the snow.
Yep.
Yeah.
I say, come on, give some snow.
Who do you see that day?
God.
Passerbys in the street. Come on, give some snow. Yeah, I like the snow. It's alright. It's good when you get snowed in. I like to get snowed in.
Right.
That's the best one, isn't it? I always wanted to live out in the middle of nowhere a wee bit, you know.
All right.
Because I think, well, that's good, isn't it? Get the provisions in.
Mm-hmm.
Snow comes. Gary out in the front gear shouting, give some snow. And then the snow comes, and you're snowed in. Can I go to the work? Sorry, isn't it?
Sorry,
worst things. So, get the fire on. Kettle on. Good times, yeah. Gary. Shall we get into this?
Let's go.
Yeah, enough padding, Gary. Yeah. Packing on the layers for the warmth. Kill List, Gary. Directed by Ben Wheatley.
Right.
Yeah. Written also by Ben Wheatley and Amy Jump. So, I believe you've just finished watching the film.
Not long ago, aye.
Gary said I have a bit of a nightmare of a day. Although, why he left it to today, I don't know.
Well, that's true.
You know what I mean?
We've had weeks.
Yeah, I mean,
and this episode's been put back.
This episode's been put back, which was down to me. Initially, definitely. But I'll have people know that I was here 2 nights ago.
Aye.
Fully prepared to record. And Gary informed me, we're doing the podcast. He exclaimed, I haven't even watched the film. Apologies.
See how we're going.
We'll get there.
Up to my. Up to par. But
I think you'll be fine, Gary. You off the cuff, no bother. I've kept you long enough to ken you long enough. there's a saying in there, Gary, and apply it to yourself and feel confident. Right. So I hadn't seen this film, and neither had you. I'd had it in Bloody Free Will. What did you think?
Well, I was enjoying the film. First hour, yep, loved it. Gripped. Thought it had sort of a uneasy tone to it. I didn't find it uncomfortable at all. I've heard people, like Mark Hamill, talking about a really unsettling film. It's definitely hard-edged, but to me, it was never uncomfortable. But I had a sort of, you could feel like kind of sort of brooding atmosphere going through it, like something was building up.
See, I felt, I'll let you finish, but I'm totally with you at this point, definitely.
But for me, it totally, flushed itself down the toilet in the last act. Once it started getting into the more cultish, the cult conspiracy thing, I was a wee bit, dropped out the film a wee bit, because to me that was kind of jarred with the whole sort of realism of the most of the film up to that point.
Yeah.
And then the ending itself, it was almost like a, no, it was almost a Deus Ex Machina. Not quite, because it didn't really resolve the plot or anything, but it was one of the things where it made what you'd experienced up to that point kind of irrelevant.
Totally.
It was a bit, yeah, like a Bava moment.
So I heard some people saying, "Oh, they pulled a Serbian film," and I kind of get that reference. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, but I was getting thinking, what was it gonna be like, kiddy fucking again? Right. This and but anyway, you know. But obviously, like when and I don't know. I mean,
yeah. It didn't work at all for me.
I'm totally with you.
I don't know if they just decided, make the ending a really shocking twist, but it didn't work in that way for me, because it totally just made me feel like...
I'll jump in and I'll give my kind of thoughts on it. I was much the same. I was really enjoying the characters. I really liked the two leads, and even the wife and you know, there was enjoying the kind of the realism of the kind of grittiness of the relationships, and you know, the kind of something's happened in the past, foreboding, right? But it was definitely trying to make you feel that something was going to happen. Something wasn't right that was going on, right? Now, the only kind of... There wasn't enough for the ending. There wasn't enough of the occult stuff speckled in. There was two bits, really, where she puts the mark on in the back of the...
Yeah, the Fiona character. That's the kind of link, right?
And then when she's outside the hotel room... Aye. And they're going to do the hit, right? And to me, that just didn't feel enough, right? Other than that, it was all led by the score. Everything that was happening, foreboding-wise, there's a scene where he's playing with his wee boy and the wife, and it's a totally normal scene, and the only thing that gives any atmosphere is the music, right? Now, I mean, I've only watched it once, right? And it don't get me wrong, I got what they were getting, but it felt very heavy-handed, like... But the only reason we were feeling that was because of the music.
Possibly.
There wasn't any companionship with what we were seeing and what the music was giving, right? At that point, anyway. And there's a lot of times with that when it ramped up that really heavy, foreboding, kind of creepy music. Now, like looking at something like Antichrist, it does a similar thing, but the content in there is far more in keeping with, you know, the tones of what's happened is far more in keeping with what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas this, it was like, you know, believe what happens at the end.
Right.
And, I mean, like, watching some of the interviews on the Blu-ray, like, they were talking about, one of the producers was saying, he'd been saying to Ben about doing a genre film, like a horror film. And I think the film they did, and Ben was really into doing, like, a crime film, right? Like a kind of, I don't know, I've not seen his first film, but like it was, what is it called? Down Terrace.
Right.
Which that was. And this guy was like, no, we need to do like something like a genre flick. So they do Down Terrace, and it gets like loads of accolades and really does well and things like that. And the guy's like, all right, fair enough, you're right enough. So then they were like, we'll do like a crime, a horror next. But the only horror elements really in this film is the ending that they're trying to, like, as soon as that occult thing comes, that's when the horror, like, other than the foreboding music. Right, there are heavy, like, violent parts to the film. Other than that, but horror wise, I feel the only elements are like stacked on at the end, and other than that, it feels like a gritty crime, like hitman story, right? Which that all works. I mean, I thought some of the kind of like the violence and the effects things like that were very reminiscent of something like Irreversible. You know, it was very, it didn't shy away from showing you much. You know what I mean? But I agree, like, as soon as that happened, I was like hoping that there was going to be a better resolution. I was like hoping it was going to, like, I was enjoying the kind of hitman, the build up, you know, the kind of, we had the priest, then we had the librarian, and then we're getting the MP,
right?
And we can kind of get robbed of the MP thing.
I wish it had just stuck to that.
Aye.
That was the most interesting thing about it,
because
I was going for, he was some kind of war veteran, he has issues with violence, and it's that sort of nature of masculinity dealing with sort of a war trauma, like what violence actually does to you if you have to commit it.
It felt like he was going to fall off the edge properly, and that was where the horror was going to come from, or the, you know, that element of the film was going to come from, and that worked. Like, that was what I felt, and alright, maybe you don't want to be predictable, but that was what I thought we were building to. and would have given like a resolution that was, like, because anything up to that point that happened, it was kind of, you know, you would want to look at, you would take away as like kind of like violence and maybe something to be shocked at. He was doing it,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, with the torture scenes and things like that. So I felt like that's where it should have went.
Mm-hmm.
That was the natural project, but it feels like they've just kind of stopped that, like cut that story, like put two stories together.
Aye.
I mean, apparently it was a short film idea they had originally, and he got the actors involved, and then it evolved into what Kill List became. And that, it does feel like that, because it feels almost like two ideas stitched together. You know what I mean? And it, all of it looks good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's shot really well and staged really, you know, interestingly. And the horror parts at the end work, like in that tunnel. They're pretty cool.
Yeah.
But for a different, if you'd got there by a different means, I think.
I just kind of left, was pissed off at the end. I mean, the thing with doing that sort of type of Deus Ex Machina at the end of a film, it's, for me, it only works if it's worth getting there type thing, you know, like Wizard of Oz is fine, because even though it was all a dream, the journey is so good, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
But,
but was it all a dream though?
Well, true, right, but if it's something like, you get to the end of the film and the character's got like a split personality or something like that, sometimes it feels like you're just cheating the audience. If it's no worthwhile, thinking back to the film, you know, was that worth it despite the being sort of robbed in a way? You're being told this is the reality or whatever it is. Like Shutter Island was a film like that that kind of annoyed me a wee bit with that ending. You gave your trust to a story, and then at the end, it's been, the carpet's been pulled away. For this, this felt like it totally didn't need to do any of that. The first hour, finish that film, as you're saying, it's two films in a way.
I mean, the way it weaved in the whole Kiev thing, right? You know, the thing that happened in the past. It never intended to tell us that, and that was fine, because I could buy that, and you didn't need to know what had happened. You could get there in your head, and with the way the guy was acting, you could kind of get what, you know, where it's come from.
Yeah.
But I thought the characters of the client, you know, like cutting his hand and stuff like that, and then I thought that all really worked well and was really quite interesting.
Aye.
And I just feel it wasn't. They just went Wicker Man at the end, didn't they?
Yeah, Wicker Man.
Yeah, I mean, it felt as if it was going to be like cleverer, or I mean, people are saying it was ambiguous, like in some of the reviews, right? And it leaves you like with no answers to the questions you asked, but it gives you like, just like being ambiguous at the end of that film would not have been the way it went. It was telling you that basically it was this cult that was doing everything for the beginning, but there's no right. It's just like, I don't know. It's just like, They've got the client there as, and you know, as part of the cult. They've got his doctor. They've got that Fiona.
Right, well, that was a thing, because through the film, I was thinking, are we seeing a sort of warped perspective from Jay, the main character? Is everything that's happening as in reality? I think it is. I mean, the doctor character, that was weird.
Yeah, he was very like. And that was, he was weird.
Where's doctor? He says something. Where's the doctor? Yeah. Somebody.
And he's the talking about his hand and stuff. I mean, what was that? You know, his hand was all infected and stuff like that as well. I mean, you could think, is it like some sort of hallucination? You know what I mean? But
yeah. And then when he sees Fiona out the window, it's not clear if that's reality. Probably is, because they're trying to guess.
Yeah, it did kind of feel like unreality, but it was given over to the whole supernatural thing. You know, what has she done with this?
Yeah.
Thing, and like with the symbol, you know what I mean?
For me, it raises questions: who was in the conspiracy?
Yeah.
I mean, the wife laughs at the end. Mean she was in it?
I did. I mean, what I'd read, I hadn't read much on it before, but I had read that there was something. Like, I remember reading something like to the fact that she was kind of encouraging him to get back to the kill list, being a hitman.
Yeah.
and that it was kind of her that was behind things a wee bit, but that wasn't really what I got when I watched it. I know what you're saying there, but like that could just have been kind of like...
I wouldn't think so, because she does take some people out.
Aye.
When they're
good as well, actually. She's all right with the gun.
but so I don't know what the reason she's laughing after.
I don't know if it's maybe a kind of...
just like...
knocked her out maybe and drugged her. I don't know, it's maybe just a bit kind of...
Also, did she know...
Aye, who she's right, fighting, the
fight scene at the end, Jay's forced to fight a hunchback character. Mm-hmm. They're both wearing masks, straw masks. So can they see each other? Do they know how much can they see?
Aye, true. Yeah, does she know it's Jay kind of thing? Don't know. And basically it turns out to be his wife and his wee boy.
Yeah.
Like, in the back and stuff. And he's stabbed.
Serbian film moment. Yeah. Which, Serbian film was what, 2010, we said?
I think so.
This is unclear whether that would have been an influence.
I don't know, but there were some other parallels about, you know, the way he was with his wee boy and stuff like that and talking and the fact that he was out of work and going back to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There was quite a lot of parallels, true. You know what I mean? It was, and the basic graphic imagery, you know what I mean? I'd say there's probably... I think back, there's probably more actual graphic imagery in this than there was in a Serbian film.
Yeah.
I think. So there's not lots of violence in that to later on.
Aye.
No. Well, because again, you didn't really see him shagging his eye hole.
I remember I said about Serbian film that. That works much better because it's a shocking ending, which is built up to kind of
it's earned.
Sensing some coming. Yeah,
it's earned, and you can kind of get why the characters got there.
Mm.
But this, as I said, the film was a much more interesting film when it seemed to be going the way it was going.
Yeah,
with the kind of increasing levels of him losing it, and then even when he starts shooting the cult people, right? You think, oh fuck, this is him going off again. Right. But when they start going like apeshit, like as in possessed or something, you know, like it's really like it's something I've seen it in a video game, but you know, it was really that kind of, I don't know, it seemed weird. I don't know, like my reaction to them, I thought they were going to like scatter.
Yeah, you would
as
think
in
that.
Like we've been fun out. No, somebody's shooting us.
Yeah.
But they seemed like we're going to kill them.
Do you think the MP was the guy who got shot first?
Could have been. I mean, I presumed that, like, that the MP was amongst them.
Right.
Gal?
Yeah, the friend.
Yeah, and he gets his, like, or stabbed in his intestines or whatever. Right, that seemed... It was good for, like, a horror film type thing, but it seemed a bit little over the top, maybe. But I don't know, as I say, at that point I was just like, I don't really know where this is going.
Right, aye. One sort of influence I felt was Lars von Trier, Antichrist.
Definitely.
Just in terms of the way it was cut, like loads of jump cuts, elliptical cutting, and things like switching the sound with the picture, so they're like you're sort of doing a montage, but the sounds from a previous scene type thing. I don't know if that is. It was influenced by.
Von Trier, but
and then the sort of sections as well, like with an intertitle saying that's something Von Trier's been doing.
Of course, aye.
It's a lot of handheld stuff as well, like handheld camera. And I don't know, like one of the reasons Von Trier does his jump cuts is, as well as being a stylistic thing, it's about because he does like many takes. So I don't know if Ben Wheatley works the same way.
I know that like as digital becomes far more popular and the cameras are light and stuff like that, There is a lot more TV and film being shot handheld.
Yeah.
Or like shoulder mounted. and I think that is like a kind of style that's becoming more common and with this jump cut and things like that. And I don't know if it's always inherent to multi takes, but it's logical to presume that it would.
I think some of the dialogue might have been improvised. It said something like written by in the cast.
That's right.
So maybe they did some improvisation.
There's a lot of it's like some, especially the fight scenes or the argument scenes.
Yeah.
That seemed kind of like that as well. I mean, technically, I don't think there's you can fault the film. Yeah. Actual tech, you know, like the way it's shot, lit, acted. I mean, it's all sound.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the U-turn, or no, even a U-turn, left turn that the script takes like two thirds into the film, like three quarters into the film. But so going to like the kind of the hit list, the kill list, mm-hmm. as it were. When we get to like the priest, and also the librarian does it as well. Basically, like says thank you.
Yeah, that's plus, I mean strange.
Mm, but they, you know, they've been sent to kill them by this guy, the client, who's eventually we see is in the cult at the end. So we're meant to believe that these are like also cultists who are being sacrificed, and that's why they're saying thank you. It's really strange because they're like, pleased to meet you, you know, I'm so happy to have met you and stuff like that. And
But that happens when he's just on his own with the librarian. I don't know.
Well,
it begs the question, is it? What's the reality there?
And that's fair enough. If it hadn't been for the end, that's what I'm saying. Like, the ending tries to give you a solution to these little ambiguities that left alone would have been quite interesting. Yeah. Left you to think, but tries to provide you a solution and say, no, it's because of this cult.
Right.
Now, all right, you could say, is that real then? But then why even put it in? It could have just having the Fiona stuff in there and maybe a wee bit more peppering of kind of like this kind of, you know, imagery of like symbols, like with Antichrist, the way they do it, leaving it a wee bit more ambiguous.
Mm.
But they throw it right in your face at the end.
Mm-hmm.
For me, was to up the horror ante, and no other reason. Because I say these few things with the thank you stuff like that. I mean, if that had been just left, I think we would have. It would be easier to then think, what is that about? It would make you less focused on, they must have had something to do with the cult.
Aye,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, the librarian gave him a motivation to go all out on him. It's implied that he's kind of on the edge a wee bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's that muddies the water there. The kind of implication of the character is that he's getting a bit estranged from his pal, and then he's going over the top.
Mm-hmm.
But that's giving credence to the whole thing. It's the whole cult thing, isn't it? So you get the kind of thread of the character going out of control, like breaking down due to the sort of stress and violence that he's induced. But that's kind of validating, the cult thing validates all that.
Exactly.
So it's not like a character study of a guy sort of going crazy. It's it was a mad cult anyway. The sort of craziness is... He was all right.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. But look, that's it. Exactly. You look at the I know it's very tonally similar in places like Antichrist. When you get to the end of that film, you're able to ask the questions. Was she? I mean, if they just had like the end, the three animals turn into witches,
right?
And said like cackle, cackle, cackle,
right?
These are a bunch of fuds, right? You know what I mean? Would it have been even half as interesting?
Right.
You know, what came before it, would it have, like... You just been like, all right, well, that's what's happened, isn't it? I saw references comparing this to, like, the Blair Witch Project.
Right.
Right. Now, again, that film, it totally leaves it ambiguous, because, like, you could say, right, a witch or something, the spirit, but you never see anything, you never know.
Uh-huh.
And you can talk about that, you know what I mean? Whereas, as you say, they've given you the solution. They've tried to give you a solution, but then still leaving it ambiguous as to what it means.
Mm.
It's just, it feels just like they need it.
Right, so the cult is behind the whole everything. The cult is employing them to kill people.
Yep, who appear to be cultists.
So they're employing them to kill the MP who's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they want them to go to the mansion to kill him, and they're going to be there. And then
But how is it meant to pan out?
That doesn't seem... I don't quite follow
it. How is it meant to pan out? Like if they hadn't attacked those cultists and left it to them all and then went and killed the MP, what was meant to happen next?
If we assume the end goal was to make him kill his wife and kid.
Right.
Surely there would have been a simpler way to do that. Seems very, very elaborate. Come to our place with guns. We're going to be there as a cult. Somebody has probably get shot in that, but it's all right. Just wanted to see this. Just wanted to see you go to battle with a knife. We're shut off.
And then like, they leave there, but how do they know where the wife is and stuff? They just turn up. I thought at that point he was going mental.
Oh yeah, because he's at a safe house or somewhere.
I thought that at that point it was just in his head.
Yeah,
but
A lot of questions.
I don't know. As I say, I did feel slightly unsatisfied with the resolution. And it's not like because of the ambiguity at all, but because of the kind of forced ambiguity. but you know what I mean? I'd have been quite happy if we hadn't known, if it had just been more implied.
Yeah.
Don't know. But I mean, everybody seems to fucking love it. it seems to get. I mean, have you read any reviews of it and things?
I listened again to Mark Kenmore's review.
What did he think of it?
He gave it a good review. I think he liked it. Remember he said as well that one of his fellow reviewers like had to walk out the cinema, like the screen, because it felt it was a bit much. Personally, didn't he really feel that at all? But
I don't know whether we getting immune to this stuff.
Well,
but in films, you know what I mean? Is it
must be to some extent, but
yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, example, I told you I watched Devil's Rejects the other night there, and we were kind of watching it, and I watched it with my mate Ian, and he'd seen it before,
right?
and he'd told me it was a lot kind of darker and more violent than House of Thousand Corpses, which I mean, it is, it's more serious, it's more. Slightly more in the real world, but there was stuff happening and like people dying and things like that. And he was like holy shit, like that's like fucking serious, man, isn't it? Like, you know, he was reacting to it quite as if it was to me, it still was coming across as quite cartoony and not very real, not real, you know what I mean? Because the way it was shot and things like that. I mean, I really enjoyed the film, don't get me wrong, but like, I thought I was starting to think, have we been immunized a wee bit to the kind of. More kind of mainstream, like horror violence, which I think I have been for a while, but I don't know, when I was just watching this, I was expecting it to be a lot worse.
Right, aye.
Than from what he told me before. And I was starting to worry, thinking, like, am I being corrupted? Yeah, the BBFC, right?
I think that when he goes to town with a hammer and that librarian,
I'd say so. And I mean, when he was, smashing the guy's face off the wall and stuff like that, when he came back, it was kind of grisly and stuff. What else was I watching? Was it in that? I'm trying to remember stuff that kills in that. I can't remember. But I know, I mean, I enjoyed it, and I thought it was, I had some teeth to it at that point, you know what I mean? And the kind of whole taking out him firing away to take out the kind of paedophile ring or whatever it was, right. I think that's what it was implied to be. That was fine. I mean, that worked really well when Gal's like waiting out in the car and then he gets the shotgun out and you don't know what he's going to get and find. That was quite cool, but you see it kind of shut the bed a wee bit, didn't it? But as I say, like, I don't know, folk seem to love it.
Right, I went on to IMDb. I saw a few posts like good but crappy end.
Oh really, right. It's got a 3 out of 5 or a 6 out of 10. I'd say that was fair.
Right.
I'd say that would be fair. I'd say like the Blu-ray.com review was a bit more kind of, yeah, for the movie it gave it 4.5.
Right.
Don't know, as I said, I feel the first 2/3 to 3/4 was definitely a 7 or 8.
Yeah.
I loved all the character attraction, the kind of build up to the to the kills. And I mean, like the bit when they're sitting in the hotel having a meal and the they've got the God crew in the background singing, and like you just don't know what the guy's going to do. You know what I mean? But I thought it was quite, what he did do was worked pretty well. You know, I like the kind of change up from him as this kind of like slobby father out of work, like kind of ex-soldier who maybe like, you're like, he's quite apathetic about life, and this big switch when he got this, when he goes back to work, to being this totally proactive leader type, almost, you know what I mean, he was taking charge, he was kind of worked really well, and it was quite, it was showing the kind of empowerment that he felt from A, working, and like B, the violence he was able to carry out, which again kind of seems like he could lose it quite easy, you know. And I mean, he lost his temper pretty quickly. Him and his wife were pretty, like, you know, loud shouting matches and stuff like that. So you could see that coming, and that all worked.
Yeah,
that all worked. And I really, you really think like this, his pal's gonna get in the middle of it and get he's gonna get like killed. You know, that that's how he's gonna go down. It's maybe gonna be that kind of thing. But
yeah, and I did feel the suspense. Like, I was curious. How are they going to resolve the supernatural, like Fiona character? She's doing all this weird shit. What's going to happen? Like, I was curious, but I wasn't happy with it. We actually resolved it.
Nah, definitely not. What was I saying? I mean, I just can't get away from the feeling that it feels like two different films stitched together, or like a divided in an ending that makes it more of a kind of horror ending. Traditional kind of, or like, as I say, The Wicker Man-ish, or even like Antichrist or a Serbian film, very, you know, very borrowed, whereas the rest of the film is actually quite original. Maybe not completely original, but what they're doing works really well. It's a bit of a shame, isn't it? As it's, because it worked. Just on a side note, there's this a line where they're sitting in the car waiting for the priest, I think it was. Oh no, or is it the library? And they're sitting in the car waiting for one of the marks anyway. And they're talking about the Fiona lass, saying how she's been hanging out with his wife.
Right, yeah.
Because that was weird as well. See, I thought there was something more there. Because that was like, and you know, why is she hanging about? I wasn't sure if it was because of this mark she'd put on. I mean, maybe that was her finding information, but like, I don't know. That could have been more interesting. But they're talking about, he's asking her, like, he's saying about sex life, wear and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And he's like details. And then he's like, Gal's like, put it this way, I had to shave my pubes.
Yeah.
I was like, what is, and he's pissing, he's still laughing. And I'm like, oh, I'm gonna have to ask Gary what he meant, but.
Yeah, I was perplexed as well.
Does he just mean that she made him shave his pubes and.
Well, he had to shave his pubes after. What happened? What happened?
I don't know.
She tied them in knots or something.
I don't know. I really don't know. I was a bit kind of, what does that mean? Who's that for? Who gets that joke? I was like, oh, maybe Gary will care what it means. I still made me laugh because I was thinking, what the hell? What's that? But then maybe that's what it's there for.
Yeah, so the Fiona cat, she's trying to get in there to set up this, to use them as marks, I guess, like for this ritual fight or whatever.
And that's like, that seemed weird as well, because one minute she's taking them all out and then she seems fine, cut to him already, like getting masked up, and then they bring in the hunchback. It seemed like there was no connect, it was like, you just had to kind of suspend belief and just. If you hadn't seen her for a while, you could maybe have said, oh, that's fair enough, but like, you just saw her.
What was the last scene we saw her before that?
I think she was shooting guys. I don't think there was anything. Or did someone knock on the back of the head? I can't remember. No, somebody knocked him in the back of the head.
Right.
As far as I can remember, the last we see her, she's in the house with a gun. I'll read you some of the kind of what they called the blurbs on the poster,
right?
Yeah, the people, you know, what people say about it and things like that, and see if we what we think about them, Gary. I mean, I don't want it to come across that we're just attacking this film. Like, we're not attacking it.
No.
And I'm not going to say like these things and then be like, oh, fucking piss take. I just feel that it lost its way.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I had obviously had a way they wanted to go. Mm-hmm. I feel it's the wrong way.
Yes. So
took the wrong road there. Right, turn the roundabout.
I went the wrong way, went straight across the roundabout. So, like, one of the best British thrillers in years.
Mm.
Did you say that, Gary?
Two thirds.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, definitely. The scariest Hitman movie I have ever seen.
Possibly.
I guess so.
Mm.
How many Hitman movies do you know? Leon.
Right. The Samurai.
That's scary, Gary.
No.
No.
Pulp Fiction.
Guess so. Wasn't scary. Maybe. So maybe. A gut-wrenching chiller.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have said that. A cult classic in the making? Probably, but... I think it's... A lot of people are going to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like after the fact, if you know what I mean. I think the word of mouth will probably carry it.
Right.
Through. Because even though I wasn't thrilled with the way it went through, I was kind of saying to like a couple of people, like, just check it out. It's quite interesting. And as I say, I think it is. It's definitely sets up some interesting stuff in the first part of the movie and stuff. And finally, a superior shocker.
Another the greatest quote of all time.
I wouldn't say superior.
Superior? Superior to what?
What's that? I'd say a decent shocker.
Yeah. A shocker.
Yes. That's a shocker.
I don't know, maybe seeing it again, now you're kind of prepared for the ending, it might work better.
I'll check it out again. I did enjoy it, and the characters' interaction, and, you know, I thought it had the right amount of kind of funny moments and then kind of serious moments, and just a shame. It's just a shame for me about the ending that didn't go a different way, because it could have been quite an intriguing British film.
Yeah.
Whereas the way it is, it's just about there.
Maybe just something about more exploring the relationship between the two pals and how that was kind of constantly erupting into violence. Like they kept fighting all the time, actual fighting, but it was kind of weird, like they were in control of it but just wanted to fight.
For me that worked almost like kind of like I've never been in the army or anything like that, but that almost kind of worked as this kind of like working relationship that they would maybe have, you know what I mean? Wrestling, you know, because they always seemed in good spirits afterwards, if they just needed to get out of their system. And it was like they held any grudge really, that, you know, when the actual physical stuff was happening. So it was kind of that kind of worked for me. Okay, it was more about him erupting, and like, you know, the line where he says, like he was saying that I'm sorry about stuff and things like that, and he says, I know. He says, you're a fucking psycho, but you're my best mate, and I love you. You know what I mean? And that was to me where the film. That's it. That was the film. The way that guy kind of went.
Yeah.
Whereas it becomes like you're kind of either thinking, you start like, I'm not saying you shouldn't feel sorry for him, but like, by the end you're like, that's what they're trying to get, because he's killed his wife. It's a very much like kind of try to shock you with the, he's killed his wife and he's Wayne. To me it was like,
yeah,
all right, okay, can I get anything else now? You know, Whereas I think he could have become like a far better kind of, not a villain, but like, it was almost like making him out the hero at the end, if you know what I mean. All right, okay, it's left kind of ambiguous of how he feels about that, because he's not very, visually, you're not sure how he feels about it.
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't really react.
Yeah.
At all.
Those elements at the beginning, looking back, like, were very much reminiscent of the way the male character felt anyway in the beginning of Serbian film. You know, as I say, like the whole being approached to go back to the old work he used to do, kind of thing. That was very much in the kind of relationship with the wee boy and stuff like that. Obviously, there's no masturbation talk, but what was the cat thing?
Yeah,
bringing them bringing the rabbits. I wasn't sure, like, he was in the garden just before that, like the night before that, and I wasn't sure if it was him, you know, if it was something like that, you know, again, we're wondering about him and his sanity. And then the actual cat being strung up. I mean, I guess those were kind of sprinkling the cult thing more with the film, but it was very light for me. It felt like it was almost like an afterthought. So I guess it was there, but it just didn't feel like the presence was there enough to justify what happened.
Yeah, if they'd gone for a more surreal tone through the start, through the first two parts of the film, then that would have been more, it wouldn't have been such a massive jump, a massive leap and shift in tone to get to the ending. But yeah, just that, it was too jarring between the sort of start realism, the first sections, and then just jumping over the edge of the cliff into supernatural type stuff.
At the end of the day, I will watch it again, I think. Just as you say, to see, compare, and see once you know what the ending is, if it makes any more of a, if it seems more coherent or like in line with the rest of the film. Yeah. But
I did watch a wee interview there with the two lead actors, and the interviewer had mentioned something Ben Wheatley had said, that the story is in the edge of the frame type thing.
Right.
So maybe if he's like, if you're watching it for a second time or a third time, you'll be able to see, like, it's giving you the story, hitting it, what's actually happening.
Maybe.
You get information that's sort of spelled out to you, but you'll be able to pick things up, maybe make more sense.
Yeah.
A second time, but
I mean, I'd say it's definitely worth a second watch. As I said, the first two thirds of the film definitely earn it that. To see if it can become more of a coherent experience. As it sits in my memory, I just feel that that changed gear too much at the end. Maybe you're right, maybe there's more there. Need to maybe, if we check it out again, we need to maybe come back.
Right.
Bring it up in a later episode. Just, you know, if we find it, we've...
Sure, yeah.
We've found any, because I wouldn't like... If I feel there's something different I've got from it, for that to be the last word on it, that I feel that it fails at the end, if I change my mind. So, would you recommend it, Gary?
I think I would recommend it. It's worth a watch, I think.
Definitely. It's interesting to see like a film like that from produced in Britain. That is kind of like, has got that violent streak to it, and that kind of edge that we seem to find in more in kind of like European films, maybe, you know. And it wasn't too polished, you know what I mean? Aye. It wasn't like didn't feel like a Hollywood film or, you know. So it was.
Yeah,
it was
definitely an achievement, like in terms of independent British filmmaking.
Yeah.
It was at $500,000, I think.
It was pretty low anyway.
Yeah,
which is, I mean, it looks magnificent for that price. Isn't it? Definitely, he's got a new one out.
Sightseers.
So, don't know. Say that's more of a kind of romantic film, but it says it's still kind of dark. Not as dark as Kill List. It says he'd have to have someone shoot a child on screen for it to be darker than Kill List. Don't know if I'd agree with that. It's maybe a bit. Don't know if it's just that dark, is it? You think it's dark? That dark?
What?
Kill List?
Kind of. Does he mean like in a film or actually filming?
I don't know. I guess. Yeah, fair enough. I never thought of that. I was just presuming he meant in a film, right. But yeah.
Yeah, not much darker.
It's like
that.
Derren Brown's new special. But no, I mean, I felt there was a dark undertone to it, but I didn't feel it was like. Especially because of the ending, I didn't feel it like, too dark.
Mm.
I think it could have went a lot darker had it not been the kind of surreal ending.
Mm-hmm.
And been more a study of the J character falling off the edge.
Mm. I'm just thinking.
Oh,
the three titles.
That's just in.
The three titles.
Yes.
They're part of the kill list, yeah?
Yes.
So the Hunchback's definitely on the kill list. No?
No, I don't think so. Well, there's four titles.
Is there?
Well, there's the priest,
aye.
Librarian,
yeah.
The MP.
Oh, the MP, yeah.
And Gal had said there's only three on the kill list.
Oh, did he? Okay.
He says that when they're first talking about it in the gun, he gets the gun out in the garage.
All right.
He's asking how many, and he says three.
Right.
So the Hunchback, yeah, that's when that title card came up. I was like,
yeah,
it seems odd. It's like it's like when you're playing a video game again. It's like the hidden boss.
Right.
You beat the guy, and then it's like, oh no, here comes someone else. Okay. I thought you were going to come up with something profound about the titles. Like, well, it was a priest, a librarian, a MP, and a hunchback.
Mm.
And in the Bible, it says, right. You know, it's not going to say something like that. A well-made film.
Mm-hmm.
All in all, and let's see what he does next. Eh? Maybe do a George Lucas special edition of Kill List. Go back and sort it, fix the ending. Is that us in the film, Gary?
I think that's it, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry to people who like it or love it. Some people seem to love it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'd just like to point out, Gary, that I'm always sober when I do this podcast.
Right.
There has been speculation that this is a beer can. Yes. You don't even have a beer.
I do not, no.
Can. And I don't have a beer can. Mine's a can, that's what I mean. Honestly, I'm not drunk. This is a well-known brand of energy stimulation drink that I always have that makes me a gibbering budgie. And if it was beer, I would actually be asleep. So, huzzah! There you go.
Hey,
you
that's a disclaimer. Solved.
That's
maybe
solved.
You can throw any ices
in. No. We have considered doing it on beer a couple times, haven't we? We've never actually got around to doing it. I don't think there's anything else left for us to say, Gary, except now it's time for
Random Shit.
Hello and welcome to Random Shit.
So you got any news this time?
I had some, Gary, mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what happened. I lost it.
Did you?
No. I had a bit of problems with my mobile phone today.
Aye.
And I had Windows open, and I hadn't opened the news articles. And I managed to finally fix my phone, so then it was time to like I had to go and make dinner and things like that. So I never actually got to read what the articles were. Like, I know the titles and stuff, the headlines, but I couldn't actually see them. Sorry. So I will be checking it out as we go. Have you got anything?
Got a few things, aye.
Oh really, Gary? You think that's all right? Go for it.
Do you know the Warner Archive? You familiar with this?
Nope.
It's like Warner Brothers, they have a Burn On Demand DVD service.
Oh,
like
I actually have
titles
heard.
That
yeah,
have never been put
I have
out on DVD
heard of
before.
It. I think I heard someone talking about it in a podcast, requesting like the old kind of Warner Brothers cartoons, you know,
right.
Requesting those get burnt. And things like, yeah, uh-huh.
Although if I just announced they're going to be starting releasing Blu-rays.
Right.
I think the DVDs were definitely burn on demand. These are going to be like limited run,
right.
Blu-ray pressings. And I don't know if they're going to move to strictly burn on demand, but I don't know if the quality there would, if people were getting a burn on demand Blu-ray, people would pay for that. But anyway, well, one of the first titles they're releasing is the Coen Brothers film Hudsucker Proxy.
Oh yeah, uh-huh.
Which I thought was a bit, really? the Coen brothers can't get a film out on a full
Blu-ray. Get a box set, like yeah, a Coen yeah, brothers yeah. box set out. Aye. Who's that out by? Is that I can't remember, but like they've got like a kind of a box set like yeah, yeah. films out. So like yeah, it seems a bit odd.
Seems a bit surprising. But other news with Warner Brothers is that Criterion are going to be releasing their first Warner Brothers titles
right
since like Laserdisc days. So that was always like the kind of Criterion's Moby Dick in a way, trying to get right. Warner Brothers to announce to agree to like sublicense their titles. Warner Brothers were determined to release in house, but now they're thinking, I guess, I don't know, the state of the Blu-ray market, they're feeling that they can't really sustain that anymore. I don't right. know. So they're going to be doing limited runs, and then Badlands is coming. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that was out in Laserdisc that you'd wanted? You know, that had been a part of the Criterion Collection then, or that had been really kind of like something people had been after.
What, in terms of Warner titles?
Yes, sir.
Citizen Kane.
I was going to say that. Is that something you think they would put out again after?
I think any of the major studios, they wouldn't sub-license like the kind of tentpole films, because I think they can always make money off of them.
Sure.
Although they've never had a good relationship with the Magnificent Ambersons.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Will's second film, which only came out on DVD in the US like last year, with Citizen Kane box set.
Right,
they'd never released it.
Is that the one that's in the box?
Yeah, it comes like a DVD just like on the back.
What's the deal with that? Like, is it not?
Well, the film had a controversial history. Wells basically, the studio recut the end,
right?
Made their own ending. It was weird. Wells got kind of sent to Brazil to shoot some carnival footage with the agreement that he could cut the film down there.
Mm-hmm.
But then when that was happening, the studio previewed the film and it got really bad reactions, so they're like, alright, we need a new ending. So they cut a total new ending that Wells never agreed to, and without his permission. And
that seems like such a, like, after making Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
And then they're like, nah, we don't actually trust them. We're going to send them away and fuck about this.
The tragedy of Wells' career. Because Citizen Kane, that was such a crazy contract, like unprecedented.
Yeah.
The fact that he was this kind of theatrical wunderkind that came into Hollywood,
uh-huh.
given like carte blanche, final cut, could do any script, any film he wanted, could write the script, direct, act. And the fact that Citizen Kane eventually bombed because of the whole, it was kind of based on William Randolph Hearst, mm-hmm. the newspaper magnate, and he basically campaigned against it. So that in its initial theatrical run, it couldn't get shown anywhere, hardly.
Right.
So that took a beating, and then he was kind of resented in Hollywood after that. Well, so he had so many problems with getting films financed and cut. If you look through his back catalogue, every film, there's like multiple cuts. It's the thing with Touch of Evil, the Master Cinema Blu-ray, mm-hmm. gives you all the different cuts with different aspect ratios and stuff.
Right, right.
There's like three versions of that film. There's multiple versions of Mr. Arcaden. How did we get to that?
Oh, we're talking about Warner Brothers releasing.
Yeah, yeah.
You're saying about that, that the second film makes them.
So you would think that the one they would maybe want to could make some money off by sub-licensing, but I guess they'll do their own Blu-ray at some point, but...
Yeah. There you go. Sorry. what else you got?
Oh, other Warner Brothers news. It's been announced for 2013 some more Blu-rays that are coming, and these are titles that I've wanted for a while, but they've been out in the States for years.
Right.
A couple of years now. But they're finally come to the UK. So we've got The Maltese Falcon,
uh-huh.
Treasure of the Sierra Madre, two Bogart films, An American in Paris, And then along with that, these are all steelbooks.
Oh, right.
Quite interesting. Uh-huh. And they're reissuing some... Casablanca's getting a steelbook. North by Northwest is coming out in a steelbook. Gone with the Wind. Streetcar Named Desire, which has recently been released in the States, is coming. The Jazz Singer, which is getting released in January, is getting a steelbook. Yeah, so I don't know. I might pick up some of them. It's interesting that the UK tends to get steelbooks and the US tends to get digibooks for a lot of these ones.
Quite like the digibooks, me.
Yeah.
I don't actually have any, I don't think.
Okay.
I don't think I've got any digibooks, but they always appeal to me. And like, I'm definitely going to pick up some of those Universal ones. That's a bit,
I don't know why.
Weird one,
I think UK market, they will only buy digibooks.
Like to read.
They're getting some metal.
Oh,
I like the metal.
Metal, you can get that cash for steel. You know, on the internet. It seems odd.
Yeah.
I mean, I do like a steelbook, like, I don't know, something a bit nice, about, especially the those Universal ones are really nice, with digibooks. It's the same with, like, I think Big Lebowski, North by Northwest, both get, like, digibooks in the States. Shawshank Redemption, you know what I mean? And we can get just basic Amarys, you know?
Yeah.
It's a shame.
And a lot of steelbooks are getting, there's possibly too many steelbooks now. Like, when you're getting, like, play.com exclusives, like, they just kind of reissue steelbooks, like, over and over sometimes.
Yeah, like, and it seems like every film has a steelbook version.
Right.
You know, like, new films.
Yeah.
When they bring it out, it's like, oh, special steelbook edition. And it's just, like, it's getting kind of oversaturation-wise, isn't it? Because you're really not getting much for your buck. I mean, especially a lot of the steelbooks seem to be just... They don't even have much on the back, you know.
Yeah, especially with studio titles, where you don't even get a booklet.
Exactly. That's a steelbook with a booklet. I'd buy that. That's almost as good as a digibook. You know what I mean? That's. But I know. I know what you mean. It's weird.
I don't know if that's a thing. I guess it'll be cheaper to release a steelbook. If it's maybe because it's extra costs for releasing, in the UK, because everything has to go through the BBFC. To get rated, so that's an additional cost to release something in home video.
It's true.
In the UK.
But then look at something like recent. I know it's bigger titles and they're definitely, you know, going to move units, but like Jaws and E.T., they've both been issued in like standard steelbooks, what steelbooks they didn't have in the States.
All right, aye.
And then now, like Jaws has been issued in a digibook as well. And all right, the E.T. one, I think, was only included in the special, like, spaceship.
Aye.
Spaceship edition. See, steelbook, digibook, and spaceship edition. So that seems even, like, so if it's cost, then that's, like, I know something like Jaws is going to move, but are people going to triple dip? You know what I mean? Not getting anything else, really, other than another digital copy, if you want it. So I don't know. You may be right, though. That might be... Might be the thing, but then look at those Universal ones like Killing Mockingbird and things like that have come out in the Steelbook editions.
Although that Universal line, there was many more of them in the States.
Right,
there's only been like five, maybe I think in the UK. But
it's weird. It's weird.
Another piece of news I'm quite happy about came out this week is regarding Masters of Cinema upcoming Blu-ray of Fear and Desire.
Sure.
It's been confirmed, Simon.
Yes.
It's going to have these three shots on it. Yes.
Oh,
three shots
the
one.
That's good. Because you worried only rights to one, didn't they, or something?
Yeah, well, the Kino one said, right. Oh, we're going to do the three. Then it turned out, oh, no, it's only one, sorry.
And oh, right.
When Master of Cinema announced they were releasing it, they confirmed that it would have the Seafarers in HD restored. But then just they've recently confirmed that they're going to have Day of the Fight and Flying Padre as well, although they're only going to be upscaled. But props, because I think it seems like very difficult to find who the rights holders are. So props to them for getting them actually on here. But
cool. That's really good. I've never seen Fear and Desire, but I checking out what it looked like before and stuff like that, it looks worth checking out.
Yeah.
Definitely. We were talking earlier on about the Zombie Flesh Eaters review. It's getting some pretty high marks, the Arrow video one. I've got to admit, like, the screen caps look really nice. I pulled out my like Region 1 DVD, the only copy I've ever had. And it was horrible. I just was looking at it, just to see, because I remember it being pretty beat up, but it was really like nasty looking. Even for a DVD, you know what I mean? Well, like for a DVD, it's pretty nasty looking. So I think it's going to be a bit of a revelation checking out in this Blu-ray. I said to you, but like, anyone out there who's ordered the standard edition from Arrow, you're not getting the poster. Apparently there's an issue with space inside the box, which seems odd, but right. I don't know if it's because it's the dual format edition or whatever, but if you ordered the slip box on the site, the steelbook or the DVD, you're still getting the poster. But apparently it said that those editions won't have it in future pressings.
Aren't it?
I don't know if it means all of them or maybe just the slip box. So,
right.
Well, I guess it won't have any more pressings of that, but seems odd. As I say, I think they're going to get their ass kicked a wee bit from the fans that
again
ordered it. Aye, because it is a bit of a piss take.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even saying, like, we'll fucking post you out a poster. If you really want it, we'll post you out.
Yeah.
That's what they want to be doing. Because not everybody's going to do it. Anyone who's buying the standard edition ones, not most, but there's a lot of those people that are just maybe pick it up and maybe not even know there's meant to be a poster.
Nah.
So, for the people who really want it, they could say, like, it's cool, we'll send you it. Like, we fucked up. We tell you about Bennett. And, you know, because people have ordered that in good faith.
Aye.
What I want to know is, it's been the DVD authoring house, the packing people that have put it together, right?
Aye.
Surely the covers have to have been printed already. And right, they say, usually on it, poster included.
That's going to be even bigger. To realise.
Aye.
Can they fit in a poster?
I mean, it's out on the 3rd of December, but...
Aye, well, you think you would have planned that before?
Yeah, you think
space?
Yeah, aye, when they were designing and everything, because I think the booklet's pretty thick.
Yeah.
40-page booklet, but yeah, so I don't know how it's not fitting into that, though.
Mm.
I mean, usually when you get the double disc box, there's enough space.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, but I feel like they're going to get
lynched. I remember one of the Arrows, I think it was one of the Filchi ones, was pretty bulging, because they had like the Arrow catalogue as well.
I think it was the Beyond that was
right,
pretty bulging, because I remember when we were getting it, we were like, this is heavy.
Right,
But it does. It just feels like they're because people were, as I say, pretty excited about that poster, because I think it was always pretty hard to get it.
Right. Okay.
And an original print of it was quite expensive if you found it in good condition. So it sucks a wee bit because it's looking to be their best release picture wise and things, and it's they've kind of dropped the ball a wee bit maybe. Anyway, looking forward to getting that. So. Mm. Checking out again. You're talking about doing your Christmas films.
Aye.
Yeah. I asked you about, like, it's not Christmas horror films or anything like that.
No,
it's
no.
Just Christmas films in
any
general.
Any Christmas,
like,
type of film.
Yeah, like Home Alone kind of thing.
Aye.
Yeah. And you've got 12?
I think I've got 12. I mean, I've got some that I'm definitely watching.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be a stretch to get to 24.
Yeah. You're talking before
forcing
myself
to watch some stuffy and blah blah, but
yeah,
but probably ones in the telly, so you can take them.
That's true.
And then I've got some Blu-rays.
One was in the other night that, like, last week or so. I started watching it, but I kind of fell asleep. Julian watching it, I was tired.
Right. Muppet Christmas Carol just came out in the US.
Aye, it's been cut though. It's not been cut. It's out in its theatrical version. It's,
right.
There's a section missing.
Oh, is there?
It's, I think, only ever been released on, like, 4:3 video.
It was on
the VHS I was doing. It's a song where he's like Scrooge's ex-girlfriend sings a song.
Right.
And it kind of, apparently, remembering it does open it up a bit more emotionally for his character.
Right.
But that's totally excised in the most of the cuts on DVD and stuff like that, and on the Blu-ray.
Hmm.
A shame.
So I know announcement for a UK.
Yeah, I know.
Probably to get that, but probably on the telly.
That's a good film. Like, I enjoy that film. It's definitely one of the kind of better modern adaptations of the Christmas Carol.
Holiday Inn. I think I might buy that on DVD, just to get the DVD for 20p on Amazon.
I think that was scheduled for
a Blu-ray release.
I saw it
in the year.
Have you seen it before?
I haven't seen it. No,
you've seen White Christmas.
Aye.
So yeah, White Christmas is a loose remake, isn't it?
Right, I think so. Aye.
As I saw White Christmas the first time last year in its entirety,
and
It's a Wonderful Life, there's not lots of Christmas in it until near the end,
you know
what I mean, but whereas It's a Wonderful Life I just love from beginning to end,
right,
I don't know, White Christmas just, I was expecting White Christmas, you know what I mean? It's right there right. in the title. I was expecting more Christmas, more of a Christmassy feeling right. to it. I still enjoyed it, but it just didn't quite nail the Christmas for me, which I was hoping maybe I would get more of from Holiday Inn.
Right.
So I was going to try and check that out as well, actually. Will you be watching It's a Wonderful Life?
Aye, probably will.
Yeah, we usually watch that on Christmas Eve, so we do. What was the other one I was thinking of there? You go ahead with some more titles if you can think of
it. Other ones I've got ready, Home Alone. I think I might pick up The Snowman.
Oh, aye,
I'm not sure what version to get yet.
What's the versions?
Oh, there's
mean,
a Blu-ray.
Aye, right,
I think that you can get that, the one that comes with Father Christmas as well.
I've got that somewhere. Three. I've got that somewhere. Right. Can I let you check that out?
I don't know, that's £6.
We got that by mistake one time. We got sent that accidentally from like play.com or something like that. Like, we hadn't ordered anything like it, and we got sent it, and we asked for the thing that we actually sent, and they never asked to send it back, so I never did.
All right.
So it's a double pack with The Snowman and Father Christmas. I think it's still made sealed.
That's an excuse to get the two of them, and they're fairly cheap. Mm-hmm. I think because the Blu-ray will have all the extras, I think, that's ever been released.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame like, that's cropped into it in this day and age. It's like, it's not as someone said something about, what was it they were talking about? Was it the audio or the openings? There's different openings to it. And like they're saying it's like a half-hour film.
Right.
And they couldn't have put, you know, it's not going to take much more space to put these flaming things. Mm. I think the openings are in it, on the disc, but they're not, they could have made it branching.
Right, yeah.
You know, it would have been, but, ach, hey, hoo-hoo. Yeah, I know, there's no man want to check out, definitely. What else was I thinking of? Die Hard.
Batman Returns. That's not Christmassy, really, either.
It is. It's awfully Christmassy.
Is it?
Oh, fuck, aye. That's a Christmas movie. The balls. Batman Returns.
Yeah.
Checked that out fairly recently.
Not that Christmassy.
Yeah, it is. It's really Christmassy, that one. There's snow in it and everything.
Well,
Well, to men and that, no, and he's like, a woman, you know what I mean?
Oh, Metropolitan. I'm going to watch that. That's it, Christmas.
What's that?
It's a Whit Stillman film.
Right, I know the title.
I picked it up as part of my Criterion holder.
Right. Mm-hmm, yeah. I think I've got, Santa Claus the Movie.
Mm.
Yeah, that would be good. I've got that on DVD for it. Right. You seen it before, right?
I used to watch it at the time in VHS.
Aye, it was alright.
I was younger.
It's alright. Some cheesy fun. Over the top John Lithgow.
Right.
You know, getting it the loud, you know, and some Dudley Moore getting his drunken elf impression.
Elf.
Oh, Elf.
That's one of my Christmas favourites.
That was a film I never wanted to see, right? And I caught maybe about the second half of it. But no, I caught about two thirds into it.
Right.
A third into it. I caught the last two thirds of it. And I actually really enjoyed it.
Oh, yes, amazing.
I really liked the Chanel.
Yeah.
Really good in that. I'm not the biggest fan of Will Ferrell, but like, or Ferrell. Ferrell? That did.
Ferrell sounds like ferret.
Yeah, that's what you say.
I say Ferrell.
Right. So I'm not the biggest fan of Will Ferrell.
I don't know if that's right or not.
I don't know if I think it is. But, but I thought he was good in that.
Yeah.
That worked pretty good. What else is a Christmas movie, Scary?
I've got a list.
Oh, mate.
I can sell my list.
Yeah, why have you got two copies of It's a Wonderful Life in VHS?
Just it, like, the brown one was the one we had for years, and then I don't know if we bought that. Well, that was kind of, I think my mum gave it to my dad for a gift, the original one, and then somehow we got the white one, which is the collector's edition, it's got a documentary on it.
Right.
So, I had two. I don't think that documentary's ever come out on DVD or Blu-ray.
Oh, really?
Maybe DVD, you know, the Blu-rays.
Yeah.
Let's get a wee insert booklet as well.
Nice. Seen what is it? Is it Jack Frost? Michael Keaton?
I haven't seen that, no.
Sorry. No bad. Have you ever seen Mickey's Christmas Carol? That was one I used to watch when I was younger. Like, and I watched it like maybe in the last 10 years again.
Mm.
And it was so short. I really thought it was a lot longer. I don't know if it was cut or anything like that, but it seemed like it was always a lot longer.
Mm.
You know, it's got Scrooge McDuck as Scrooge and, you know, and Mickey's Bob Cratchit. And it was pretty good. But I always remember it being like lengthy.
Mm. Okay.
And it's like it's no more length than an actual cartoon. It's lucky, right. Lucky if it's 30 minutes odd or something like that. Maybe it's more than that.
Oh, but I picked up, where is it? Disney's Very Merry Christmas Songs. You ever seen that?
Oh, no.
It's like a sing-along songs Christmas version.
Right, right.
I had that when I was a kid.
Right.
And they gave it away to charity or something.
And you bought it back. It's been there all this time. I used to love all the kind of like chipmunks, you know, in the Christmas tree while Mickey was decorating it and Pluto was after the chipmunks.
Aye.
So much so that, like, maybe, well, the last... trying to think how long ago, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, we bought like Mickey's Once Upon a Christmas,
right?
Which was like a kind of like Christmassy, you know, just some fun to watch at Christmas, right? Just put on, and it was all right, but they'd done like a Twice Upon a Christmas, and it was in 3D, it was like CGI, Disney CGI, like, you know, which wasn't quite as successful.
Right. Okay.
But the 2D one, you know, the normal animation was all right. It was very, felt kind of classic,
right?
Disney Christmassy, all right. Like Donald fighting the three nephews, the triplets.
All right.
They made that big igloo castle. Do you remember that? Right. In the old cartoons, no? Classic cartoons.
No.
It was all right. It was good. Yeah, good. Some good stuff, Gary. What else you got?
So, Muppet Christmas Carol, Home Alone 2, All In, two versions of Miracle on 34th Street.
Okay, I think there's three or four.
I've seen the Richard Attenborough one.
Yes.
I haven't seen the 40 one, from the 40s or whatever.
Right, aye.
Santa Claus the movie, Gremlins.
That's really Christmassy. I remember that being. I mean, like, so much so that they rebranded the box of the DVD and the Blu-ray, like, to have them have a Christmas present instead of just the plain box. That was quite Christmassy. So it was.
The Bishop's Wife.
Bishop's
Wife. It's a Cary Grant film. Don't know anything about it, but I was just looking on lists of Christmas films. The Ice Storm. That's a Thanksgiving period. Black Christmas.
Remake that's meant to be absolute gash. The original's pretty, like, I don't know, the remake seems to go into backstories of things and it seems like pointless, but definitely check out the original.
Bad Santa, seen that?
Billy Bob Thornton?
Yeah.
No,
I should watch that.
Is that good?
It's really good, yeah. I'm gonna pick that up. You can get that for $5.75 or something on Blu-ray.
It's not one that I've ever really heard much about, to be honest.
No, it's just a kind of silly.
Is it him that directed it?
No, it was Terry Zwigoff directed it.
Right.
But it's a really strong film. Yeah. It's quite crude in moments, but it's got a heart to it.
Check that out. Cool.
Arthur Christmas, you've seen that? That came out last year. That's a good one, yeah. Aardman animation. Tend to do that in Blu-ray, but don't really have enough money at the moment.
Just going to check out some Father Ted Christmas specials. Gonna check that out. So I mean, there's plenty of Christmas movies out there, Gary. I'm sure we'll find some. We can talk about some maybe in the Christmas special.
Right.
You know, some of the ones you're talking about there. We can bring them up. So shall we move on?
Okay.
Since we've got pumped that fucking to death.
Here for days through that.
You're just gonna select all and cut it, aren't you? Gonna...
Got any pickups recently, Simon?
So yeah, I've got a couple of things. Picked up The Thing on Blu-ray again. Already had this, but I wanted the original artwork, so I got this. Well, the other one is that with the slipcover. Still alright, but when I got that originally, I was kind of happy with it, and then I was like, oh, I wish I'd got the original artwork, so I'm a bit like that, you know. So moving on, I finally got through my Ghostbusters steelbook.
Alright.
Which I really like, because the Blu-ray had the kind of blue slime effect to it.
Alright.
And this looks far more like
That looks nice.
The fucking game, you know what I mean? Some nice rear stuff going on with the Marshmallow Man. Mm. And also get a digital copy of this, although I've had some problems. So I have the code was coming up invalid. I've been going back and forth with Sony Entertainment, and I still haven't got my bloody digital copy yet, Gary. The interior is quite nice as well. It's got the four of them. I don't know if you can see it standing.
Oh, aye.
So, pretty happy with that.
Is this a, was that an old release?
It's been out for a while, so it has the actual like, the print and stuff like that. Right, but it still looks, it looks really good. Yeah. But I don't really know what the game... It's like the Evil Dead was released in like a steelbook and stuff like that as well, but I don't really know what the game is behind it.
Mm.
But as I said, I was pretty glad with this because it's a better artwork and stuff like that. It's more... I wasn't really bothered at picking up the other one, but this kind of like sealed it. I was like, ah, I like it. Seen the film? You like the film?
I've not seen it for so long. No,
it's pretty good. I like Bill Murray, and it's pretty... It's one of his best comedic roles, I think. Very good. So this next pickup, I didn't even know existed until a while ago. It's Evil Dead Ultimate Edition.
Right.
Now I'd seen the cover before, but when you see the cover, it just looks like a normal DVD. Right. Basically, the story is it's been released in Blu-ray over here. Right. And there's a couple of features on that aren't on the US one. It was released in the US in Blu-ray as well, which I'm planning to pick up at some point. But it was released in a limited edition at first with a bonus DVD with special features. Right. So I was looking at that and maybe trying to get that version. But it's pretty expensive now, but and rare to find because it was only a limited run. But I was looking at the special features, and most of them, not all of them, are on this.
Right.
And there's more on this actually, this Ultimate Edition. And it's a three discer. It's got the widescreen version of the film and the full frame, much like the US Blu-ray has, and the UK doesn't. And as I say, it's got all the special features. It's got some nice packaging. I mean, like when you look at it,
it looks like a VHS almost.
Yeah, that's what I thought when right. Almost like it's kind of a hardback cover, almost, and it opens up, and you've got some nice artwork there, and it just keeps going, and there's more. There's more artwork. It's really nice. You know what I mean? And the discs all have kind of custom artwork and behind them as well. It's the gift that keeps on giving, and you've got a double-sided poster as well. I probably sound more excited about this than I should be, but I just had no idea it existed. You know what I mean? I really didn't realise it was... I've got like the Book of the Dead version, you know, the kind of rubber Necronomicon kind of thing, which is all right, but it's not a single disc thing. And it's nice enough, but this just like... I was like, oh my God. Like, when I got it through in the mail, I got it for like £8 off at Amazon.co.uk, new, and it was sealed and everything. And I'd seen it going for like £20 other than that. But so I was pretty happy with this. The good thing about it is I'm still planning to get the US Blu-ray, so I've got the full frame and the widescreen in HD. But for the Blu-ray, he actually did a kind of George Lucas and took out some like mistakes almost, because there's a part in the beginning where they're going to cross a bridge and you see Rob Tappert, the producer, off the left of the screen. It's prominent in both the full frame and the widescreen, but they've taken him out, and there's other things like lightning, like matte shots that they've managed to make it look better, not as you don't see the lines, you know, in the matte shots. So this has it both the full screen and the widescreen unaltered. So it's quite nice to have, and it looks like it's more or less from the same master as what the HD transfer is, because it's still pretty nice, even in standard definition. But I was pretty happy with that when it came. I was like, oh my God, I think I want, when I get my Blu-rays, I'm going to put them in this as well and have this on my shelf as my in my Blu-ray collection, because it's just really nice. Seems a shame to put it away anywhere. Anyway, that's that. And final pickup was Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale, which may come in useful again. Again, like really nice packaging. A wee bit kind of, it's a bit disappointed it was sealed, but it's a wee bit of kind of bend there. But I don't think there's anything I can do about that. And it was, again, it's not rare, but it's quite expensive usually. And I got it for like, I think £16, and it's usually quite expensive. So again, it's pretty nice. It's a Blu-ray and DVD. And it's got some nice packaging stuff, you know, it's pretty cool. And it also includes, as you were mentioning before, Santa versus the Martians.
Oh, yeah.
It's a free standard definition. looks kind of beat up, mind you. But it,
yeah,
it's,
is that probably the main or something? It's on YouTube.
It probably could be. Yeah.
Although Kino just put that on Blu-ray.
What?
Santa Claus versus the Martians.
Did he?
Yeah, yeah.
Did they? Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
Right, no, you could be right. Yeah. I thought it was kind of... But I don't know. But anyway, it's nice little inclusion and stuff like that. And the film looks really nice. I've had a really look at it and stuff like that. Yeah. So, I say I quite like the packaging. It's, it's quite elaborate.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be what we might look at Christmas.
Right.
If that's all right with you, I think we'd agreed that.
We did that.
What about you, Gary? Have you got any pickups?
Aye, I've got a few.
Mm-hmm.
Got this. Moneyball.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Got this for free.
What the hell? Yeah, who's getting stuff for free? What did you get for free?
Do you know the Sony did the movie reward thing?
Yes, aye.
Did you ever join that? Like?
Oh, for when I got Ghostbusters, I went to the page and entered a code, and it said I'd been entered into a competition or something.
Oh, right, aye. It was an absolute disaster. I think that... don't know why they decided to do it, but I first knew about it, the first Sony Blu-ray I got, I think, was Taxi Driver.
Mm-hmm.
So entered the code, and then it kept saying, we will check back soon, prizes coming, rewards coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like months and months this went on for. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I think it sent an email to everyone who had registered, we're closing Sony Movie Rewards.
Oh, no, no way, right?
And I think... if you had 200 points or more, you could choose one gift,
right,
which was a Blu-ray and book combo.
Right.
So it was either Moneyball, Girl with Dragon Tattoo, like the new one,
mm-hmm,
or The Vow. And then it took about 2 months to get this delivered, but...
Oh, holy crap.
I guess it was worth it.
Yeah.
Get some fun on.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a good film.
Yeah, I've heard that. It's really good.
So I've got the book as well, like the book and the non-fiction book and what the film was based on.
Uh-huh, sure.
So it's pretty good. I also got the Hitchcock box set through.
Yes.
I've not broke into that yet.
Have you opened it?
I have opened it, aye. Got a couple of box sets here, but I think I'm just going to leave them to... I'm trying to pick off my single discs, get them watched. But they keep piling up.
That you go for your old pickups, yeah.
Aye, that's all I've got.
Right. So we'll wrap this motherfucker up.
Yeah.
Dude, we'll, you know, get it out of the way.
Right.
So there you go. That's it, isn't it? Done. You know what I mean? We've finished the kill list, as it were.
Right.
What we're gonna be looking at next time, Gary? Have you decided what we're gonna...
I think I've decided.
Right.
I think we should do kids.
We're going to look at kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Written by Harmony Korine.
Yes.
Directed by...
Larry Clark.
Sure. Cool, as I said, after seeing Gummo, this is one I wanted to check out. I haven't seen it yet, so...
Right. So join us next time on Cinema Subculture. Thanks for listening, man.
Keep it extreme.
Nightmare.